Bird Dog's khaki shorts are just like your mother. They'll wrap you up and keep you comfortable no matter where you are. Their zipper pockets will securely hold all your things. They'll fondle you with a love you thought only your mother was capable of. Oh, and don't worry. These shorts won't call you a disappointment. You might even start to love Bird Dogs just as much. If you want to experience motherly love again, hurry to birddogs.com/MLB and buy a pair. They're selling out quickly, but they'll throw in a free Bird Dogs tumbler if you get there on time. That's birddogs.com/MLB.
All righty, hour number two of our radio program. That's right, it is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS. Let's chat a little NFL right now with a longtime football scribe. He also has a book coming out of many that he's released in the past, and this is on September 12th. The name of the book is Once a Giant, A Story of Victory, Tragedy, and Life After Football. And, of course, it is Gary Myers who joins us right now. Gary, no, it's been a while, but appreciate you coming on. How you been?
I'm doing great, Zach. How are you?
Well, I'm doing fantastic. We will talk about the book in just a bit, but you covered the NFL for a long time. Just what is your reaction with everything that's happened the last 24, 48 hours with the running back position in the NFL?
Obviously, the NFL has decided, the teams have decided that, you know, running backs are replaceable parts. And although I still think they're extremely valuable, I think this actually started years ago with Mike Shanahan. No matter who he plugged in to his running game, they would rush for 1,300 yards. And it's carried over to Kyle, which is kind of what I was surprised that he even traded for McCaffrey last year, because it seemed no matter who he put in the backfield, you know, would be an effective runner. But I think it is a little short-sighted in that, you know, come December and January, you still have to play defense. You still have to be able to run the ball to win. And in the case of the Giants, where it didn't appear they were all that far apart in either guaranteed money or total dollars, I think the Giants could have easily bought themselves out of what's going to be just a messy situation for the entirety of training camp, where Barkley's not going to be there, but his name's going to come up, you know, multiple times in every one of Dable's press conferences, and the players are going to continue to be asked about it. I think it just creates a cloud for the Giants that could have easily been avoided.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised with the Josh Jacobs situation, because they didn't even intend for him to be on the roster this year, where they didn't extend him the fifth-year option a season ago. But when it comes to Saquon Barkley, I know that Daniel Jones had a good year last year, but he's their most valuable player on the offensive side of the ball, and I thought they would have got that deal done.
Yeah, and when you think about the money that they gave Daniel Jones and they gave Dexter Lawrence for another – and I'm guessing, it's an educated guess, that, you know, maybe another $3 million total, $2 million in guaranteed money and throwing another $1 million on to a second-year salary, probably would have got this done from everything I understand. And, you know, after you give, after the Giants give Daniel Jones about $80 million guaranteed, or exactly what the figure is, it's enormous for a guy who hasn't accomplished very much. And then you're cutting corners with Barkley over a few million dollars. Just to be able to avoid this become such an issue, I thought it was worth the money for the Giants, like I said before, just to buy their way out of it, both because of his value on the field, Zach, and the way he's respected in the locker room. He's really the face of the franchise. And very rarely do you see teams treat the face of the franchise slash best player the way the Giants did. And it's kind of not the Giants way, but apparently this is, you know, the Joe Shane way. And this was his first major contract confrontation. And I just don't think he handled it the way that I would have expected. I thought, despite all the back and forth and the leaks and whatnot, I thought it was typical negotiations, and then when it got right down to it, because the NFL is such a deadline league, I thought they'd find a way to kind of bridge the gap and get this done and make Barkley happy. Now, who knows how invested he'll be in the team when he comes back.
Well, that's my next question for you, Gary Myers. We know Tony Pollard's already signed the tag, so as long as he's healthy, he's going to play week one. For Josh Jacobs and Saquon Barkley, they've not signed that tag yet, so I wouldn't expect them to be there for any of training camp, maybe the back end. But I wonder, would they take it to the step of holding out a game or two? I don't think it really benefits them, but this seems, at least in the moment, the last 24, 48 hours or so, where the running backs are really annoyed right now.
Yeah, and let's be clear about one thing. He's not holding out because he doesn't have a contract.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he can't get fined. So there's a technical difference there. I think Le'Veon Bell's situation a few years ago taught them all a lesson that, especially for running backs, there is nothing to be gained when they have such a short career span. There's nothing to be gained sitting out a year. They're never going to make up the money they lose this year. And the chances that they'll do better next year, you know, what's going to change a year from now?
Not much.
And if Barkley gets the same deal a year from now and he sits out this season, he's lost $10 million. So I also thought it was usually in these kind of situations, Zach, each side looks to make it appear that they gave in so the other side can claim a victory. And that's kind of when you know it's a good contract, when both sides are sort of happy, but they think they didn't get quite as much as they wanted from the other side, but they can live with it. And that's a win-win. I think it's a lose-lose here because not only, you know, the Giants now face these Barkley questions every day, like I mentioned, but the Giants were basically guaranteeing 2 years worth of franchise numbers for Saquon. And so instead of playing for the $10.1 million this year, they would have guaranteed approximately $22 million over the next 2 years. Now, what happens if he gets hurt this year or he has a bad season? But, you know, more likely when he's healthy, he plays really well, but he has a history. You know, at least 3 of the 5 years of playing, you know, of getting hurt. And he will finish the sixth year after 2023. And I just don't know what the chances are, even if the Giants don't franchise him again, that he could go out in the open market and find somebody to pay him the $12 million for 2024 that the Giants were willing to guarantee. So I think he loses in this case, too. I can understand, you know, ego-wise, he's going, look, at the money he just gave Daniel Jones, money he just gave Dexter Lawrence, you know, where's my money? But it's, you know, unfortunately, it's just reached a point in the NFL where running backs just don't get paid. And it's not like the Giants were offering him $6 million like Miles Sanders got from Carolina. They were still offering him an awful lot of money. And, you know, you wonder how much, you know, being in New York really means to him because of all the money he can make off the field. Now, I know you don't have to be in New York anymore to cash in on those endorsement dollars. It's not the same as it was 20 years ago, but he still makes an awful lot of money off the field. And I just think he would have wanted to solidify himself as, you know, a Giant for life. And there's a lot that goes into that. And, you know, there's a lot of value to that. And now, you know, his future with the team is very much uncertain.
Gary Myers here with us. And I kind of get both sides of the argument because mm-hmm. if you look at the last 10 Super Bowl winners, the best running back in the regular season was Marshawn Lynch. Outside of that, there's not many household names. So I understand why teams are saying we still got to run the ball, but we don't got to overpay for running backs. And I get why players are annoyed because we all know you got to get your money while you can. This is a lethal game and you never know how long the lifespan of an athlete is going to be. And especially at that position, you have guys right now that are playing at a pretty high level when healthy, and kind of the way that they're programmed, and deservedly so, is if you perform well, eventually you're going to get that big deal. So I kind of get it. I know it doesn't make for the best radio in the world because we all got to take a side. I get it from both sides here, Gary.
No, I agree. I agree. But I think in the case of Barkley, and I always side with the players because their careers are so short. In the case of Barkley, I do think he ultimately made a mistake here just turning down 2 years worth of guaranteed money because of the uncertainty of what could happen this year and his history of injuries. But you look at some of the cases from the last few years, you know, Todd Gurley gets a bunch of money and he gets hurt. Ezekiel Elliott gets a bunch of money and he becomes completely ineffective and loses not one step, but about three. And I know the Cowboys would like to have that deal back, which is obviously influencing why they never even offered Tony Pollard a multi-year deal, that it was basically the franchise tag and sign it when you want. And he signed it a while ago and he's going to make $10 million this year, which is probably a lot more than he thought he'd ever make because he wasn't a first-round pick. But I'll stick to what I said, you know, right at the top here, Zach. I still think running backs are really important. And the teams that have the really good ones, although what you said about Marshawn Lynch being the best one of the bunch in the last 10 years or so is true, but you wonder how many teams might have been able to take that next step if they really had an elite running back. And maybe they would have been the team that won the Super Bowl if they did.
Gary Myers here with us. Just going around the rest of the league, Gary, and then we'll talk about your new book that's coming out in September about the Giants, and really good stuff with what you sent me. Very excited to read it. Dallas, I know you usually have a good pulse on the Cowboys. Where do you think the Cowboys are at? I'll give you my take on them. I think Dak's a good but not great quarterback. The last 2 years, the defense has played great, but the quarterback has let them down in those big playoff games against the Niners.
Yeah, I agree. The game they lost to the Niners 2 years ago was the one that really surprised me because, you know, it was a home game in the wild card round that they lost. I'm pretty sure it was the wild card round.
Mm-hmm.
The major question going into the Cowboys season now is it's kind of circled back to being all about Dak. Can he win a big game like you just mentioned? And, you know, he puts up good numbers in the regular season for the most part, although would he miss 5 games last year and still led the league in interceptions? I thought he played very well in the victory against Tampa in the wild card, but the Bucs were also so awful in that game that it didn't take a great game from Dak to win it, although I do think that he played very well. But then they go out to San Francisco, and that's where their season ends. Basically, with every quarterback, unless he gets there, you always wonder if he can, and they were saying the same thing about Peyton Manning early in his career. I'm not comparing the two. I'm just saying that, you know, there were questions about Manning. He went the first 3-4 years of his career without winning a playoff game. So the focus is, you know, it's a quarterback league. All the rules have been skewed in that direction, that if you don't have a really productive quarterback now, a guy that can win games and drive you down the field in the last 2 minutes, you got no chance because it's a passing league now. And so I think there are major questions with the Cowboys. I think, you know, Philadelphia obviously is still going to be good, although they've had a bunch of changes on defense. I think they're really good. And all the changes made on defense, the guys they're plugging in are from Georgia, which had one of the best defensive teams in college football the last few years, so I don't know if there'll be a drop-off. But I think the Eagles clearly are a step ahead of the Cowboys right now.
You look at the 49ers, it's crazy how a team can continue to mess up the quarterback position, and then every year it seems like they're shoeing bare minimum for the NFC title game. We talk about how much the importance is now on the quarterback. It's kind of amazing to me that the 49ers haven't been able to figure out that position yet.
Well, they thought they did have it figured out with Garoppolo. He just couldn't stay on the field. And that's a major problem. I'm not sold, you know, on Brock Purdy yet. And I'm not even talking about whether or not he's the same player he was at the end of last season because of the injury. I don't know. That was such a small sample size. But Kyle Shanahan is such a good quarterback coach that I'm just going to say this, and I don't know how it's going to play out this summer. I don't know if Purdy's going to be healthy. Maybe Trey Lance takes a big step forward. But I would not be shocked if Sam Darnold makes a real run at the starting quarterback spot there.
Wow.
You know, here's the thing people forget, Zach. Last year in Carolina, Sam got off to a 3-0 start. In the middle of the third game in Houston is when McCaffrey got hurt, which happens every year.
Yeah, but, 2 years ago.
Right. Was that 2 years ago? Yeah, 2 years ago. I'm sorry. You're right. It was 2 years ago. I thought Sam was playing really well up until that point in the 2021 season. And once he lost McCaffrey, the season fell apart and Sam played awful. And then last year was just a circus with him and Baker Mayfield. So now he goes to a situation where there's not a lot of expectations, but there's a great coach who's done really well getting quarterbacks to play, you know, take their play up a level. So I wouldn't be surprised if Sam has a really good summer. And I'm not saying he's going to win the job But I think he'll be in the conversation, especially if Purdy's not 100%. I can see Sam beating out Trey Lance this summer if that's the competition.
In the AFC, where are the Jets? The Jets are the what best team in the AFC entering this season?
The Jets are the most hyped team entering the AFC.
And they don't want any of the hype. They want Rodgers, but they don't want Hard Knocks then.
I know. And, you know, I feel really strongly about this. If a team doesn't want Hard Knocks and doesn't want the cameras in the meeting rooms and doesn't want them all over the place, it shouldn't be forced on them. Now, I know they all share in the money and everything. It's not like the NFL needs the money from HBO, you know, to survive. If a team wants to do it, you know, God bless them. Let them bring the cameras in. But if a team doesn't want to do it, they shouldn't be forced to do it. I mean, the Jets are trying to win a Super Bowl. They got a 2-year window with Aaron Rodgers. Hard Knocks is always a distraction. They shouldn't be forced to open up the doors to Hard Knocks. I wrote on Twitter the other day, and I really believe this. I think the good in-season Hard Knocks will be following around Roger Goodell, have a camera in every one of his office, in every meeting room. Let there be a camera in every one of his phone calls. Let the NFL make up another bogus crisis like Deflategate so we can sit in on how these stupid decisions are made. And let's see how much he likes the intrusive nature, having camera on him 24/7. But I'll get off my soapbox and say, if Aaron Rodgers stays healthy, I think the Jets are going to be really good. I'm not saying we should forget about how he played last year, but let's not forget, not only did he was breaking in a bunch of rookie receivers, but he also broke his thumb in the fifth game, thumb on his throwing hand, of course, in the fifth game last year against the Giants in London. Didn't miss a game, but clearly he wasn't the same player that had just won back-to-back MVPs. So I think as long as he stays healthy, the Jets have a core of really good young players. They've drafted not great, but really well over the last few years because they've still missed on a bunch, including Zach Wilson and Denzel Mims, you know, really high picks. But I think the Jets can – I'm not going to say they're going to make a run for the Super Bowl, but I think they can make a run at Buffalo for sure to win the division. And then, you know, once you get to January and you're still playing in the postseason, you know, who knows what could happen. You just need a break here or there. But I think the Jets are going to be a fun team to watch this year, again, as long as Rodgers stays healthy. Because all the pieces are there, including, you know, his favorite offensive coordinator.
Yes, the great Nathaniel Hackett. So you got a new book, Gary Myers, coming out on September 12th. Tell me about it.
Yeah, Once a Giant, a Story of Victory, Tragedy, and Life After Football. And I think this is my sixth book, Zach, and I really think it's my most important because it really addresses, you know, such a crucial issue, which is life after football for these players from that generation. It's the 86 Giants I'm writing about, the Super Bowl champions. And these players are, you know, into mid to late 50s to the mid to late 60s. And they really paint a good picture of what life is from that generation are going through. And the players from today's players and tomorrow's players, what they can expect their life to be like 35 years after they finish their careers. And there's just some really, really, you know, compelling stories in there from very big name players. Everybody you'd want to read about: Parcells, Belichick, LT, Sims, Carson, Banks, Bavaro, you know, et cetera. And I will just give this a little bit of a tease that, and I felt good that the players felt comfortable enough with me to open up. But there's five players in the book that told me on the record since their careers are over that things had gotten so bad, either, you know, mentally, health issues, financially, mental health issues, that five players admitted and detailed to me how they contemplated suicide.
Wow.
And it's just, I think some of the stuff in there is really chilling to read. Now, I do want to say the book's not a total downer. I did balance it off with how this team in 1986 became a brotherhood and how it's sustained itself over more than 35 years, and that they rally around each other when someone's in trouble and needs help. And that's really the heartwarming part of the story, but the heartbreaking part of the story is really how some of these players have really, really struggled with the challenges of life after football.
Make sure you grab a copy of it. It comes out on September 12th. Once again, the name of the book is Once a Giant, A Story of Victory, Tragedy, and Life After Football. And it's authored by longtime NFL scribe and Gary Myers. Gary, great to catch up with you. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Zach. I just want to say, if anybody's interested in pre-ordering, you can get it on Amazon or, you know, any of those online services. And thanks a lot for having me on. I enjoyed it.
You got it. Make sure everyone go do that right now. There he is, Gary Myers. We'll take a break. We'll come on back. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
So we continue to discuss the current state of the running back position. Dalvin Cook, still a free agent. Vikings thinking that Alexander Mattison, who I like, can replace his production. Austin Eckler, he got a revised contract this offseason where they added incentives for the final year of his deal. He'll receive an extra $1 million if he's able to top 1,125 total yards of offense, and an extra 600,000 if he could score at least 10 touchdowns, 150,000 for getting a Pro Bowl nod. So that's an extra $1.75 million in there. And they didn't want to give him a long-term deal this offseason. Saquon Barkley, you have an issue between the general manager and the running back where reportedly they offered him $22 million guaranteed, but then wanted to take down the average annual value, so no deal there. Tony Pollard, coming off an injury that he suffered in the playoff game, should be good to go. Got to see a little bit more of him. He was the best running back on the roster the last 2 years, and he's already signed his franchise tag. Josh Jacobs, it's clear Josh McDaniels doesn't value the position. And not only that, they didn't even want him on the roster for this upcoming season with their intentions of not even picking up what would have been a fifth-year option. And then for Joe Mixon, the Joe Mixon situation, Hickey, with the Bengals is weird because he's a good player. Now, I know that his production has fallen off a bit, right, and he's dealt with injuries, but they've started to doubt him going back to that Super Bowl where they preferred Samaje Perine in the game over him. And Joe Mixon, even though he's been a solid player, I know he's had off-the-field issues, I guess he really didn't have a leg to stand on this one because he wanted to remain with the Cincinnati Bengals, and he didn't think he would top whatever he's going to get if somehow, right, they just released him and he said, no, I don't want to revise my contract.
It's sad, but he's probably going to be right. Right? You see Dalvin Cook sitting out. We'll see how much he gets. But Barkley, no extension. Jacobs, no extension. Like, teams are not really running to pay running backs. And now if you're mixed in, at least, sure, you're getting paid less, but at least you're still on a Super Bowl contender compared to going to, I mean, I don't even know who would want him, who would sign him. But, like, let's just say, for argument's sake, I don't know, the Panthers. Say, come on in, we'll bring you in.
Just gave $6 million a year to Miles Sanders.
I'm just picking on, yeah. I'm just saying, like, you go to a different team, you're not getting a lot of money anyway, and now you're on a, you know, less, have a less chance to win a Super Bowl.
So I want to play these two cuts yesterday from Austin Eckler. One we already played, Jim. We'll play a different one because it shows you what Austin Eckler wants to have happen just isn't going to happen. Let's start it off. This is Austin Eckler with us yesterday, and we always love when he comes on this show. He's one of the more genuine and better conversations in the NFL. Austin Eckler wants answers from NFL owners as to why running backs aren't being paid.
From a player's aspect, we have no control of that. I have no control. So really who we want answers from is the ownership. Like, why are you doing this? What's the reasoning? Like, give us, like, they don't, you aren't interviewing them about it. Like, how many owners have you talked to about this? You know, zero. And so that's who we
got
here.
I would love to.
I know. They ain't going to say anything either because for whatever reason, right, they got this thing going on where it's like a new trend. Let's not pay these guys. I don't know. Maybe they're just testing us. Like, hey, let's see what happens. But, you know, you poke the bear, you know, and, you know, you're going to make us have to do something.
So I just don't know what there is to do. Because for Austin Eckler this past offseason, where it stinks for you individually, right? It stinks for many other running backs that are producing at a high level and you expect to be rewarded significantly from a financial standpoint. The league just doesn't value the individual at that position anymore. They still value the position, but it's been running back by committee, and you don't need a great individual running back to win a Super Bowl. Like, look at it recently. Last 10 years, once again, leading rusher in the regular season, Isaiah Pacheco, Sony Michel, Ronald Jones, Damian Williams, Sony Michel again, LeGarrette Blount twice, Ronnie Hillman, Jonas Gray, and Marshawn Lynch. Now, LeGarrette Blount was solid, but there's only one great running back. That was Marshawn Lynch on that list. The last 10 regular seasons for teams that ended up going on to win the Super Bowl that you look at and you go, okay, that was a guy that was a big-time back. So quarterbacks, wide receivers are more value. You still got to run the football, but you're throwing the ball more. A lot of these teams, especially how quickly the body declines for these running backs, don't think it's worth it to give these big-time deals. So think about it this way before we play this final clip from Austin Eckler. He wants something to happen. He wants something to change. He wants answers from owners. But look at his situation this past year. He was given permission to seek a trade. No one was going to trade for him because the Chargers wanted so much. But the Chargers wanted something significant back for him, but then they weren't willing to pay him what he wanted. And at the end of the day, what was the final outcome? The owners, the general managers win, and he's now on the final year of his deal where he gets an extra $1.75 million in incentives. So let me just play you this response from Austin Eckler yesterday. When I asked him, were you ever close to getting dealt this past offseason? And he voiced some of that frustration once again with the process.
No. And that's because I came with a lot of baggage. You were going to have to trade some high picks for me. The Chargers, they weren't going to let me go for anything that wasn't up there. So they saw my value there. It's funny how when they allow me to trade, they're like, okay, but we want you to get these types of picks, which were not low picks, but we're not going to pay you like you're that type of player. So it's kind of interesting where it's like, oh, if you're going to get traded, you got to get traded at this level. But if we're going to keep you, we're going to keep you down here at this level. So you can see for them. Yeah, that makes sense because they're getting the best of both worlds there. They have the leverage. And so that's why it was tough for me to get out anything out there and get a new contract. We're going to have to give up high picks and also restructure my contract. And so that's just, you know, being transparent on my situation. And look, I signed my 4-year deal. You know, I'm very thankful to have an opportunity to continue to play. I'm going to go out there and play at another high level again. But now there's just more pressure on me because I have no guarantees. And I will be a free agent after this year, you know, unless, you know, there's something gets done during the year, which could be a possibility.
So he had a very good argument there. They don't want to pay me what I think I'm deserving, but then they want premium draft picks from another team if I were to get traded. So think about that. They do value Austin Eckler, but ultimately it's just the way that the running back position is viewed right now. And even when someone gives a very good argument like that, he still can't win. So it just shows you, Hickey, that really in the last 24 to 48 hours, sure, there's going to be a conversation. Sure, the individual player is going to be annoyed, but there's really nothing that any running back can do right now. And that's why if you're Saquon Barkley, if you're Josh Jacobs, you may as well just sign the tag. I'm not saying you got to show up to training camp or any of that stuff, but you show up week one and you get the full $10 million plus instead of getting some game checks taken away. Because whether you sign that deal or not, like if you sign the deal, you get all the money and you play. But if you don't sign that deal, it's not like you're ever going to earn back that $10 million. Even if you end up a year from now getting a long-term deal, you're still out of money because if you want to go through it and sit out the entire year, you would have given up on a full basically like $11 million of salary. So yeah, Le'Veon Bell, like Gary Myers even said it, eventually got the deal, but he missed out on a full year of salary. And it's not as if the year after you have a better argument why you should get paid.
And I think it's even more sobering to hear Le'Veon Bell regretting sitting out, regretting leaving and kind of looking back. And even though he got what he wanted in terms of a big time deal, he looked back and said it wasn't worth it. And if that doesn't show you going forward, if you're a running back, should I consider sitting out or not? It's, you truly are stuck between a rock and a hard place, whether it's sitting out or just taking the money, trying to take a stand. It's impossible right now for you to win.
Do you know what TV show premiered 19 years ago today by any chance? Totally random question that I just saw when you were going on that little monologue
2004?
Right there.
2004?
Mm-hmm. July of 2004. No idea. July 18, 2004.
The Office?
Very famous TV show. Not The Office. Entourage. Jerry Farrar just tweeted out, 19 years ago today, Entourage premiered. What a wild ride it was. And we could all certainly use Sunday night's laughs these days. So they show a picture of Jerry Farrar's character, who at the time was Turtle. And he has lost a lot of weight. We know that. And he I think he almost got a job down the hall. Or at least that's been rumored. And he's filled in a few times. And that guy's like a toothpick now. But he was a pretty big boy back when Entourage did premiere. So look at the life transformation for one Jerry Farrar. But 19 years ago, Entourage, one of my favorite TV shows of all time. Not my favorite. My favorite TV show of all time is The Sopranos, but Entourage did premiere. All right, we'll come on back with a news brief. We'll tell you about all the biggest stories in the world of sports with some audio.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show. Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
All right, Inc., former CBS Sports Radio employee, and probably more well-known for his days in the NFL as a star running back, Tiki Barber, was on his old time slot earlier today, the Maggie and Perloff show, and Tiki Barber says he wishes he played wide receiver instead of running back.
You know what I would do, Andrew, is I would play wide receiver. So one of the things that has happened in addition to not being able to hit quarterbacks is you can't hit wide receivers either. Why? Because speed is at a premium. And you can't destroy those guys going across the middle like Steve Atwater used to do. You can't do that. Like John Lynch used to do. You can't do that anymore. And so receivers have gotten smaller. So if I was coming up now and I had good hands, which I did, obviously, I play wide receiver because I know there's a better chance of me getting paid being a wide receiver than there is one playing running back.
It's a very interesting point here. Now, right away, you think, okay, Tiki was only 5'10". That's not your prototypical NFL wide receiver, but you could definitely throw him in the slot. I do think there's a different body structure, though, where if you could catch passes out of the backfield, doesn't always translate into you being a great wide receiver if you just tried to go change positions. Like, it's not impossible. If you could do both, yeah, you much rather go kind of put all your resources and all your eggs in the basket of a wide receiver because they get paid more. But just because you say that, it may not be as easy as it sounds, if that makes any sense right there, Hickey.
I'd say it's even just more damning for the position overall when you have a borderline Hall of Fame running back basically saying, I regret playing the position. I wish I took any other position except for running back. And you wonder, we won't see an effect this year or next year, but 20 years from now, what the NFL running back looks like. Just because, again, if you are a kid right now, 10, 12, you know, in elementary school, high school, going to college, there's really not a lot of incentives to go play running back. It makes sense to play almost any other position you possibly can outside of running back.
And you kind of look at it, Tiki Barber, 5'10". Austin Eckler, 5'10". Tiki Barber was great catching the football out of the backfield. Austin Eckler just had over 100-something receptions this year out of the backfield. And I know we just had Austin Eckler on, but next time we have him on, maybe we'll ask him that question as well because it's a good point that's brought up by Tiki Barber. Le'Veon Bell. So this I find fascinating. Le'Veon Bell sat an entire year with the Steelers, eventually got paid, goes to the Jets. But Le'Veon Bell apologizes to Steelers fans for leaving them. And this is courtesy of Le'Veon Bell's social media.
I never apologized to the fans for really sitting out or leaving the Steelers. I never apologized. So I'm going to say I apologize for leaving the best damn fans there is in this damn world. I shouldn't have left. I apologize. I should never have left. I apologize. That's my fault. That's on me.
So look, that's a guy that eventually got a new contract, sat out an entire year. I don't know what his relationships are still like with those guys in the locker room. Because remember, when he kept on telling the players he was going to come back, and then he didn't. And then you knew there was no looking back from there. Remember, the players instantly like took things from his locker. They didn't even wait. They didn't even let the body get cold. Right away, the body was still warm. They're taking stuff out of this guy's locker. So I'm sure, even though he still got the money, it sounds like there's still regrets there from Le'Veon Bell because he's probably even thinking to himself, sure, I eventually got what I, you know, somewhat of what I wanted, but it wasn't necessary for me to sit out an entire year and also leave Pittsburgh when I could have got something similar in Pittsburgh.
And I think it also goes to show the grass isn't always greener, right? You got your money, but you go to, I mean, to put it lightly, a dysfunctional team with the Jets and your career's over. It is basically over after that. Yeah, so career changed by one bad decision.
Earlier this morning on Get Up on ESPN, they played our conversation with Kenny Clark, where Kenny Clark said that the Green Bay Packers are 100% getting disrespected. They go right to Dan Orlovsky after that clip. And Dan Orlovsky says the Packers could be a playoff team this year if one thing happens.
I look at Green Bay and say this, and I've said this, Green, and you've heard me say it. If Jordan Love is average, this team is playing for a playoff spot in December. If he's average, if he's anything like a first-round pick should be, this is a playoff team.
You kind of look at it last year. Aaron Rodgers was average last year. You look at what Aaron Rodgers did on the football field last season. It was 26 touchdowns and 12 interceptions, and they were competing for a playoff spot in that final week of the season up against the Detroit Lions where Rodgers threw all those interceptions. I don't think that's that far off. I think a lot of people this year are sleeping on the Green Bay Packers because Rodgers is gone and no one knows what Jordan Love's going to be. But if Jordan Love just plays average football, you got Christian Watson, who in the second half of the season was a stud. You have Aaron Jones. You have A.J. Dillon. Defensively, they've been inconsistent, but you got names on that defense with Kenny Clark, who continues to be one of the more underrated defensive linemen in football, and he's a two-time Pro Bowler. You have Jair Alexander in the back end, and you're in a division that it's not like it's the AFC East or the AFC North. It's not loaded. You know, people like the Lions this year. People expect the Vikings to regress. The Bears just still don't have the talent to go compete. It would not surprise me if the Green Bay Packers, Hickey, are better than what people expect them to be. It all comes down to the quarterback. And if the quarterback could just be average, then they could have a shot to go win 8 or 9 games and compete for a playoff spot in the NFC.
And to their benefit, being in the NFC, average play and average quarterback play is absolutely enough. Absolutely enough.
Yeah, if they were in the AFC, I wouldn't even consider them to be a playoff team.
Agreed.
But in the NFC, I don't think it's going to take much to go get that 7th wild card spot. Let's listen up to Tommy Curran. He was on the Rich Eisen show, and he says Bill Belichick has been on the hot seat since 2019.
You know, you talk about avoiding the hot seat. He's on the hot seat, and he's been there at different levels of warmth since 2019.
Really?
In 2019, Tom Brady won a 2-year, $50 million guaranteed contract. Belichick somehow convinces Kraft that not spending that money on Tom Brady was a great idea. He wins the Super Bowl, the Patriots, under Cam Newton because they don't have a plan. They have a good 2021. They bounce back. McDaniels leaves. Again, no plan for replacement.
So I don't think he's actually been in the hot seat since 2019. There's been pressure since Brady has left, no question. But I don't think anyone the first 2 years of Tom Brady not being there was calling for Bill Belichick to be fired. It started last year and could continue into this year because last year was a dumb approach at the offensive coordinator position. And this year you bring a legit offensive coordinator, but you still have not given Mac Jones a number one weapon. Let's listen up to Justin Fields. He gives his top 5 rushing quarterbacks of all time with our pal Brian McFadden on the All Things Covered podcast.
Being a historian of the game, watching the game, mm-hmm. if you had to rank your top 5 quarterbacks in regards to running.
In regards to running?
Yeah. All right. And you can throw yourself in the list too.
Oh, I am. Because I definitely think I am.
Okay, so start with Justin. He's in the top 5.
I'm running definitely in the top 5. No order, but I got to go with my boy Mike Vick.
Yep.
Got to go with Cam. Lamar, of course.
Yeah.
Me, and then final. Steve Young, too. Steve Young.
Steve Young. Shouts out to Steve Young.
I kind of find this funny because if you call Justin Fields more so a running back than a quarterback, everyone slams you. But then he goes into how he's a top 5 running quarterback of all time. And I'm a Justin Fields fan. But 2 years in the league, I know last year, right, he goes for 1,100 yards rushing. Do we even have to have that conversation yet? It seems like a premature conversation to me, Hickey.
Especially when that's not the style that's going to win you games. Like, it's only going to get him hurt, and I don't think that if you're the Bears, you are relying on Justin Fields to be a 1,000-yard rusher, not a bare minimum 3,500-yard passer.
Let's go to Kirby Smart on if he's talked to this team about winning a 3rd straight national championship.
We have not addressed that with them. We've certainly looked at some
some three-peat scenarios of teams like the Bulls and different sports teams that they might actually know about. No offense to the Minnesota 1935 team, but I don't know if it's going to resonate with my audience. So I don't care about the three-peat, the two-peat, or the one-peat. I care about complacency.
And let's hear Kirby Smart on how some people are saying that Georgia has an easy schedule this year.
What do you have to say to people who maybe say that Georgia's schedule is a cakewalk?
And come play it. I mean, I'd love to invite any team in the country who wants to play in the SEC. Come right ahead.
It's a very easy schedule. Have you seen the Georgia football schedule yet, Hickey?
I can't recite it team by team, but
UT Martin, oof, Ball State, oof. South Carolina.
Eek.
South Carolina's solid, but Georgia's so much better. UAB, Auburn, Kentucky, Vanderbilt, Florida, Missouri, Ole Miss, Tennessee, and Georgia Tech. So outside of Georgia, the two best teams in the SEC entering this season are Alabama and LSU. No Alabama or LSU on that schedule. And if you're buying into Texas A&M with their talent, which I'm not because I don't like Jimbo Fisher, you get no A&M either. Finally, here's Brent Venable saying he does not like Deion Sanders and his roster turnover, courtesy of the Ref Sports.
A year ago, I challenged the guys. I wouldn't like Deion and you know, give guys a bunch of pink slips. I gave guys 12 months of grace to go to class, you know, live right off the field, and to show up with a great urgency and respect for your opportunity at the University of Oklahoma.
I'm out on Brent Venables. Last week takes a shot. I read about Miami and Mario Cristobal. Now taking a shot at Deion Sanders. You were supposed to have a big year last year. You went 6-7. How about you win enough games as a head coach before you run your mouth and take shots at two different programs? Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. We'll do a little college football fix next with Hudson Mason, the former Georgia quarterback.